Welcome to Ending Radio. Who cares to beat Ohio State?
That's true.
Don't care. Don't care That's about true. The numbers or letters or really any sort of orthography at this point. Except 42-27. That's good. Yeah.
MGO Podcast 42-27. I'm down with that.
So as a result, Michigan's in the Big Ten Championship game this weekend, which is why we're doing this podcast. They're playing Iowa, which managed to pull out from a 21-9 deficit against Nebraska in the fourth quarter by blocking a punt, because of course they did. And then Wisconsin managed to gack it up against Minnesota. So Michigan does not have to see Wisconsin. They just have to see Wisconsin went 8-4 this year. They're not a great team. But you look at what Iowa's been doing, and you're kind of like, oh, this is Wisconsin Junior.
Yeah, we also beat Wisconsin pretty badly in their own house.
But yeah, it should be noted that that Wisconsin team now is a lot different than the one earlier in the year, certainly in the running game. So I think Iowa's a much more favorable matchup.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get across, because I was looking at some numbers, and I don't know how Paul Chris managed to turn this Wisconsin defense into an 8-4 team, because they are... they're giving up 3 yards a rush. That's pretty good. And I was looking at, where does that rank in the Big Ten? Well, it ranks second, a full yard behind Wisconsin. They're giving up 2 yards per rush, and that's an 8-4 team. Well, anyway, we'll start off with the Wisconsin, we'll start off with the Iowa offense.
Junior Wisconsin. It is. Hey, don't we start off with something else first, Brian? I thought there's like a list of some sort that we start off with.
Oh, yeah, all right. So here's a recipe for stir fry. MGO Radio is sponsored by Underground Printing. UGP has 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offers thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com. We also want to thank all our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Team Fan Club, Prentice 4M, and Signal Wire, which we are using right now. So the Iowa offense, very bad. If you look at virtually any stat associated with offense, it will be in the triple digits. They're like 120th in line yards. They're 103rd or something in sack rate. If you look at just regular stats, they're towards the bottom in all of those. They managed to beat Iowa State despite gaining a total of 173 yards. They got outgained by Northwestern by 2 yards. Ooh. But still,
ow!
They're averaging under 300 yards per contest, and with that defense, they are getting a lot of cracks at it because it's there's a lot of three and outs on both sides in these games. So you don't want to go full Michigan arrogance here, but I don't see how they're going to move the ball.
It's going to be hard because of the mismatch there seems to be at the line of scrimmage. And you think about that last Iowa team we saw in 2019, that had two round tackles in Alaric Jackson and Tristan Wirfs, who's already become a really good NFL tackle. They don't have that this year. They've got an NFL caliber center and nobody else. And, I mean, we've seen several times this season Michigan come up to a decent opponent who has these glaring weaknesses at tackle, whether it's Penn State or Wisconsin with Tyler Beach or Nebraska or even MSU to some extent. And every time we've been like, well, this should be a mismatch. And every time it was. So I don't really see how this is going to be any different, because those tackles have been bulldozed all year long in pass blocking. The interior isn't much better. And, you know, what Iowa has is they don't have a quarterback who can alleviate some of those issues, right? Sean Clifford could stand in there and just get rocked on every play and make an accurate pass. And Adrian Martinez had escapability and the quarterback run dimension. Spencer Petras has neither of those things. He's not a very good passer, and he can't move at all. So when the fire comes, he goes down.
Yeah, and the most recent Michigan-Iowa game, I believe, was the 10-3 game, and that was a 7-sack game, and that was not a team that had Aiden Hutchinson at full glory. And so the one thing that does give you pause is if you cut out all the other stuff, like their run game does not look good, but if you just look at what Tyler Goodson is doing, particularly in the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's averaging 4.6 yards a carry on the season. Michigan, despite what happened against Ohio State last weekend, is middling as a rush defense on a yards per carry basis, and that's without even taking sacks into account. So there is a scenario where they're very practiced at doing their inside-outside zone stuff. Michigan's defensive tackles are maybe not holding up against Lindenbaum in particular, and Goodson is able to go off for 100, 150 yards like he's done in three of the past 4 weeks. Now, those defenses he's been going up against are bad, worse than Michigan's. But if you're looking at, like, okay, what's the scenario where Iowa surprises? I think it's Goodson kind of consistently getting Michigan for the kind of gains that Penn State was getting, that Maryland was getting. The only difference there is that against Penn State and Maryland, like, Michigan's focused on Jahan Dotson, they're focused on Tagovailoa, and they're not adding extra guys to the box. There's no reason not to do that against this team.
We're not going to sit back against Nico Reganey and Keegan Johnson and Tyrone Tracy Jr. because those guys are threats. Yeah, no, that's Ryan's right on there. I noticed, we'll get into this with the Ohio State UFR stuff, but Ohio State ran a lot of stretch against Michigan, really tested to see whether Junior Colson could get to his spot, because that was kind of a weakness that Maryland was trying to expose against Michigan. I imagine that they've had a lot of practice at that after the last week, and, you know, Ohio State was getting to the line and just kind of tempoing them. I don't know if Iowa uses that much tempo, and they're going to kind of confuse themselves when they try.
They don't, but they do have a two-minute drill, right? So they are capable of that in some degree, and I would be surprised if they didn't try it. Just because if you're Iowa and you're looking at this defense, you're like, what the hell are we going to do? And, like, tempo seems like a pretty good answer for at least a couple of chunk plays here and there, and then they got to break some tendencies. So for the second straight week, we have an opponent that once they're in one formation versus the other formation, it's all run or all pass. And Ohio State, for whatever reason, didn't self-scout that and didn't break that tendency. Iowa is going to. I have to imagine that they are going to. Not out of the gun, because they only go to the gun when they're in a passing down, but the whole thing where they're, like, running, like, three play-action passes in a whole game against Wisconsin from under center, like, I don't think that's going to stick. I think they're going to be more aggressive.
Yeah, the run game for Iowa has really been hurt by that sort of predictability aspect. And then the other part about it is that even though they have this good interior line, you can get pushed with Linderbaum leading the way, obviously. And Goodson's a good running back. I like him a lot. But the problem is, you know, opponents have been able to key in on the run because they don't have George Kittle or Noah Fant or TJ Hawkinson. Or even last time we saw Iowa, remember Amir Smith-Marset, who was a really sort of like crafty route runner? I mean, they've got nobody in the receiving group that is in that caliber of player, and you don't trust Petras to get it there. So opponents have been able to really load up against their rushing attack, and I think the best thing they could do is play action, you know, in the I formation, slip a tight end out, that sort of thing. That would be my guess of what they try to go to get plays through the air, and then maybe you can run, you know, after that.
Their tight end, his name escapes me now, is being
Sam LaPorta.
Sam LaPorta, yeah.
He's a guy who's being projected as a mid-round NFL draft pick.
Yeah.
Probably their best receiving option, but not on the level of a Fant or a Hawkinson, who's a first-round NFL draft pick. But so we don't want to, like, dismiss him too much. He's probably their best receiving threat. And Iowa does do a good job of getting that guy wide open with play action. It's just that they don't run it enough. Especially because, like, if you're going play action on a first down, that might be one of the best ways to neutralize Hutchinson, because he's going to have to respect the threat of a run and then get steps that he's taking that are not directly at the quarterback. That seems like that would be my recipe if I was Kirk Ferentz. But
yeah, I mean, that's what they always do, and they love to attack linebackers. I mean, that's what Kirk Ferentz has always done, right? Play action and get the ball to his tight ends. Michigan has a 5-2 defense that they can pull out, and they use it against Wisconsin. We haven't seen it a lot since because they've been playing all these spread teams. I wonder if that might not be part of the strategy, because that's one way to nerf zone teams is just you got a guy in every gap to start with, right? And then if you got two linebackers back there, now you give up some in coverage, but we can survive that. But if you got two linebackers back there, one of them can tag the tight end, and you can kind of trust the defensive line to keep those guys clean, and the other one just has to play two gaps. But that might be the strategy against Iowa, and I don't know how they would break that if Michigan's got that going.
I'm pretty curious. I just want to throw one more thing out here. to see how far Iowa steps outside their comfort zone. Because when you look at this matchup, they don't do a lot of the things that Michigan struggles with, like tempo. They don't do a lot of the college crap, you know, that Rutgers like does. They don't do a lot of that sort of screens and other things that have given Michigan issues. Like on paper, this is a really favorable matchup for Michigan's defense, but Iowa does line up in pretty spread formations on some occasions nowadays. They just don't do some of that stuff. And like they have the 2-minute drill, they just don't do tempo that often. So how far are they willing to step outside what worked to get them through the Big Ten West to win this game? That's what I'm curious about watching. How does that game plan for Ferentz work?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Iowa, you go way outside the box early and see if you can surprise Michigan, break some tendencies, get an early touchdown or two, and try to, like, just hang in the game. Because, I mean, whatever they're doing is not working against Northwestern, who they scored 17 points against, right? Like, or Nebraska, who I think they scored a total of maybe 10 offensive points in that game. There was a safety, there was a blocked punt touchdown. Like, there was a bunch of stuff that gets set up by either their special teams, which are amazing, or their defense, and then they're just trying to, like, get a first down a lot of the time. So they're like 113th and 3-and-out rate on offense. So it's, you know, Michigan has some vulnerabilities, but they've played probably a better offense than Iowa in almost every game this year. And they're sort of sitting at the top of the S&P Plus rankings, not at the top, but close to it. So, yeah, we're trying to invent ways in which this goes not terribly for Iowa, but...
With special teams? I mean, it was...
Well...
ours have been great, but if anyone's going to, you know, block a punt against Michigan, it's this team.
We've sort of been throwing in special teams as an afterthought in the second segment, but let's address it now because they are the number one special teams unit in the country, according to FEI. Michigan had surged up to number one after the Maryland game, but the block punt touchdown has put them back ahead.
Thanks, Nebraska.
And so, but if you look at all of the different units that they have, this looks identical. On like they have a punter who gets it 45 yards and allows very few returns. They have a kicker who's 22 of 25 on the season, third nationally in FEI, which accounts for distance.
And the distance thing is really important because this offense can't move the ball. And so having Caleb Shudak means you can get to the 35 and have a decent shot of banking points on that drive because of Shudak.
Right, and they've blocked punts. They got a kick return touchdown this year. They have the second best average on punt returns behind AJ Henning, but their guy doesn't drop the ball a lot.
So, yeah, shout out to Charlie Jones. He's kind of he was a transfer from, was it Buffalo? He's like a little dude from nowhere, and like that guy has just been money on returns every year or every game.
Yeah, and so this is another way in which Iowa can maybe break the game open. Get their offense in a position where they might not have to go very far to score. But Michigan, they had a punt blocked against Ohio State a couple of years ago, but I don't think they've had one even close to that since. So the avenues for Michigan screwing up so badly that Iowa can take advantage of it seem rather thin. But again, if Iowa is going to pull the upset here, it feels like they need to be at least a touchdown to the positive on special teams.
I mean, this is a matchup where a lot of these strengths that Iowa has, Michigan can neutralize, like the special teams, for example, where Michigan can kind of match it. Because if I don't know if you remember watching the Penn State game, but after Clifford gets hurt, everyone's like, well, now it's Iowa's turn to win the game. And it took them a long time to get there. And field position was a big part of it because they kept, you know, sacking Penn State's backup quarterback, and then they'd punt. And Iowa, each drive, just kept getting the ball in better and better and better and better field position until they were starting drives at, like, the Penn State 38. And then finally, that was enough to will the offense into the end zone. I mean, it's kind of like pushing a beached whale into the sea. Like, it takes a lot of help. And the special teams is what got them there, right? Like, just kept making it easier for the offense.
Yeah, I hate to knock a guy after a good game, real quick, like, the concerns that I have would be like at Linderbaum, it's great at reaching guys. And Michigan, Mozzie Smith has been a great player lately. Hinton's a little bit slow off the line, and Jeter's a little bit slow off the line. So some of Michigan's tackles might not be a good matchup for Iowa. That's the only spot where I think that they might have an advantage. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, but back to the special teams. So, you know, they have a guy who punts it a long way and doesn't give up much in the way of returns. And Brad Robbins is actually superior to that, and just in terms of like how many of these punts are actually returned. It is a very thin number, and Michigan doesn't really give up much in the way of kickoff returns because they're all in the end zone pretty much. So a couple of the ways in which Iowa would hope to be able to break the game open seem pretty unlikely just because of Michigan's specialists.
Yeah, I would agree. Michigan is pretty well situated to match what Iowa can bring to the table, and I think that's the most optimistic thing you can say about this matchup, is that it's a favorable matchup for Michigan.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the Iowa defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Sports
back to MGO rated 42.27.
Yes.
Seth! What are we doing now?
This is more Iowa talk. Wait, sorry. There's more Iowa talk. I'm just going to come and talk to you like this now.
Stop.
I'm sorry. I'm letting you know that I've been hired by LSU, Brian.
Stop. Whatever's happening needs to stop right now. Why don't you do the ad read?
Well, we're on SignalWire right now. SignalWire is real-time video technology that allows you to create interactive video experiences. Cities use it for virtual town halls. Musicians are using it for fully interactive virtual concerts. Bloggers are using it to record podcasts. It was started by the original geeks of software-defined telecom technology. They're Michigan fans. They'll be the ones personally supporting you. Try it today at SignalWire.com. Use the code Muppets for $25 in developer credit. Brian, are we going to have Muppets this week?
What?
I'm sorry, they threw that in at the end. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, Iowa defense much more intimidating than the Iowa offense. As Alex pointed out in his FFFF, the interception rate is no fluke. They have been, I think, top 10 in three of the past 5 years and towards the top of the country the other 2 years.
Yep.
So the structure of their defense is very prone to creating interceptions, and then their rush defense has been pretty good, I would say. They are sort of conservative in a way I think that might play into Michigan's hands. So if you look at their line stats, their line yards are pretty good, but the opportunity rate allowed is pretty bad. So this is a defense that doesn't get too noisy. They're going to read it, and then they're going to react to that, and their defensive tackles aren't stars. They get pushed off the ball a little bit. So that looks like a situation where Tassan Haskins can be a difference maker just by falling forward like he tends to do.
Yeah, I wasn't super impressed with their defensive line overall, particularly the interior of the line. I think the linebackers, Campbell in particular, is good at fitting the run and patching some of those holes up. But there was definitely push for Wisconsin's interior offensive line against Iowa's defensive tackles, and I think Michigan's interior offensive line is better than Wisconsin's this year. So I think there'll be opportunities there. And they also, one other note about the defensive line is that they don't have an A.J. Epenesa this time around. They don't have an elite pass rusher. They really struggle to get to the quarterback. So just like we talked about with the offense, I think on this side of the ball as well, Michigan has a clear advantage at the line of scrimmage. And you know, how far into this game and how much they can ride that advantage is the question, because Iowa's secondary is pretty good and their linebackers are pretty good, but that at the line is the mismatch when these two units meet each other that goes in Michigan's favor.
Well, I mean, we saw a lot of successful rushes in the Ohio State game that were sort of foreordained by scheme,
yeah.
And that's not something that Iowa suffers. The pattern or their defense is not such that you can just, like, delete someone from the box by running a tight end into the flat and getting a free block that way. So there's going to be more blocks Michigan has to earn.
Yeah, but I think also with Iowa, I mean, when you play any of these opponents, Michigan's going to try to run and Iowa's going to try to stop the run. I'm curious to run outside the tackles and, maybe add in some end arounds and even just check downs to the flat. I mean, Iowa plays cover two, so you're going to have those flats decently open. And see if you can't spread it out, because the linebackers, the thing about Iowa's defense, as always, with their linebackers, is they're not the most athletic of all time. Like, that's a pretty big difference from playing a Penn State or an Ohio State. And I like the opportunities to put someone in space, whether it's Henning or Donovan Edwards on one of those guys. And if you make the linebackers have to account for the flats more, then once your interior offensive line wins a battle, then you've got more room for Haskins to really go to work.
Yeah, and it feels like a situation where the athleticism of Corum and Donovan Edwards could be telling,
yeah.
Just because, you know, they're a cover two shell, but they do run man coverage, right? So if you can get one of those guys lined up, and this might be a situation to try to go with the JSN thing on Ojabo, where it's like, okay, we got Donovan Edwards on the 245-pound middle linebacker. Let's see where this goes. So being able to suss out when that's happening and exploit that, I think, is going to be an important thing for Michigan.
Yeah, they're really built to stop stretch teams more than anything else. Their linebacker core is about the same size as their defensive tackles. And, like, Logan Lee is out there. Defensive tackle, I read the Iowa sites all the time because I have too many Twitter friends from Iowa. And building back their defensive tackles has been, like, a several years long project that they are still not very happy with. And they rotate those guys out all the time because they can't, you know, none of them can really hold up. The only thing I'm more concerned about is that they move them around a lot. One thing that Ohio State did and really showed in the UFR was they just kind of left their guys in, you know, here I am. I'm going to be in this gap and come and get me. Iowa, I don't think, is going to do that. They're going to be moving this line around a lot because, you know, if you try to do that, Trevor Keegan and Zach Zinner are just going to blow these guys off the line.
Yeah, there's no Babineau in there. There's no, I mean, Epinesa, but they had a couple of guys before Epinesa who were similar. And so their sack rate is 86th or something. And so if you're talking about Michigan, who has the number two sack rate in the country offensively, we got to talk about PFF grades at some point, by the way. we got to talk about their old OL grading because I just don't get it. But anyway, so Michigan is incredibly good at avoiding tackles for loss. They're 13 better than Georgia, who's the number two team in the country. They're incredibly good at avoiding sacks. And so the situations that Michigan is likely to face are going to be, you know, they ran the ball with Haskins and it might be third and four. They're able to run play action at opportune times because it just doesn't seem like this is going to be a game where Michigan is in a lot of like long yardage just because of the way they play. And then, so are they going to get the interceptions that it feels like they need to win? Because Haskins hasn't fumbled this year, right? I don't think Quorum's fumbled this year.
Haskins has one. He got it back. Right. I don't think Quorum's gotten one.
So this is a really sure-handed sport at running back, and you need probably to be plus two in turnovers for Iowa to win this game. And so it's like, all right, are they going to get to McNamara? Well, McNamara's thrown three picks this year, and Iowa has not really shown much of an ability to speed up quarterbacks. So I kind of feel like he's going to be comfortable back there. And just checking down is going to be enough if he wants to check down because the short yardage should be on Michigan's side after they kind of fixed it late in the year.
I watched for FFF two games because I was dissatisfied with Big Ten West offenses. With Wisconsin, I mean, you guys remember, Tyler Beach ended up on his belly about eight times in that Wisconsin-Michigan game, their left tackle, and I don't think he lost a pass protection snap in this game against Iowa. I mean, they did nothing against him when he was getting eaten alive by Michigan, so I don't have a lot of concerns about Michigan's ability to protect Cade in this game. And then looking at the secondary, the other game I watched was Purdue, which I watched to see a good passing offense. Aiden O'Connell is probably one of the three-ish best quarterbacks in the conference. And David Bell is probably one of the five best receivers in the conference. And those two guys just ripped Iowa up. I mean, just ripped him up. David Bell went over 200 yards, 11 catches on 12 targets. They had no answers for him. Now, Michigan doesn't have a guy of that caliber, but that was a similar situation where Iowa can't get after the quarterback. O'Connell's got time. Iowa can't hang with a guy like David Bell with his level of athleticism. And they just had no answers. And O'Connell wasn't making those kinds of mistakes. And so if you can keep the quarterback upright, which there's a good chance you will, and you don't make a lot of mistakes, I like Michigan's ability to pass the ball. It's just Iowa didn't face like any other competent passing offenses their entire season outside of Purdue. And so that'll be, the test. This is a chance for McNamara to really deliver another great performance and keep Michigan clean.
Right, because you have to keep in mind that pass defense, the two other Big Ten passing offenses that were semi-competent that they faced, well, Sean Clifford went out in the first half.
Yep.
And they got...
After Penn State was up 14-3.
Yeah, and that looked like they were going to run away with that. Yeah. And then Adrian Martinez didn't play last week at Nebraska. So,
and it's transferring.
Well. Everybody online was like, that's the right move.
Be free, be free.
I think you're a really swell guy who should not be a gelatinous mass underneath the pile of defensive ends. Anyway, so, yeah, there's definitely a they-ain't-played-nobody factor here. Because for one, they're in the Big Ten West. And for two, their crossover games were Indiana, Rutgers, and Maryland. So, I mean...
Sounds
it
nice.
They did obliterate Maryland by getting 7 turnovers, including picking off Tagovailoa 5 times. But what we saw from Tagovailoa when we played him is he was the worst possible candidate to play Iowa. Yeah. Right? He's just running around and throwing it up against a bunch of guys who are looking right at him. That was never going to go well. And Michigan isn't that.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa gets you because they are tricky, that they have this cover two base, and then they do a lot of weird stuff inside of that. Seth called it graduate level cover two. There's just a lot of different things they can do, and they try to get you to make mistakes. And if you don't make mistakes, you'll probably carve them up. So Cade's been great at avoiding mistakes this season, and we'll see if that that holds tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been Iowa's thing, is they're just a master class in cover two. They can run quarters out of it, they can man it up, and they can change that on the fly. So it's hard to really kind of RPS them. It's hard to, like, just really kind of nail them and find, like, a wide-open guy unless you catch them in man and just beat their guy up, you know, beat him athletically. And that's always going to be there, right? There's no way to cover an entire team with a zone. Like, someone's going to get open. So that's how you beat these guys.
Let's take a break. We've talked about Iowa long enough, and people want to know what you saw on the Ohio State film.
And I want to say,
hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next 5-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent, trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, the video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy to use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games.
Well,
I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGO blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. Welcome back to MGO Radio Podcast 42.27. We are now, sorry, let's cut out the giggling. Let's be a professional group of professionals. Sorry. And we're going to listen to Seth talk about what happened in the Ohio State game. First of all, let's start with the offense, which scored four touchdowns in about 24 plays in the second half. I've been following some of the talk on Twitter about what exactly was going down, and it just looked like Michigan had a game plan that attacked a very simple defense that got installed mid-season and didn't have any answers.
Yeah, I don't think Ohio State did a whole lot of things to mess with us except for some of their blitzes. They had like a whole bunch of interesting six-man pressures, and Michigan's answer to that was Cade McNamara looked at the two blitzers and goes, well, that means I have an open guy over here, and hit the guy over there, and that was just the end of that story. And Michigan had plenty of like very interesting tweaks. Like if you've been following Michigan's like offense all season, they ran a little bit of this thing off of that one little thing they've been doing. It's not the kind of stuff I can talk about on radio, and I'm sure by now anyone who wants to has gotten into that UFR. But it was a fun game to UFR because, I mean, if you could like have a dream scenario of what Michigan was going to come up with for this game with Jim Harbaugh, with Josh Gattis, and the different ideas that they like to bring, I don't think I could have imagined it working out any better. And then
what was your final RPS number, just for the record?
Oh, God.
You don't have this memorized? I might have gotten a tattoo of it if I were you. Just RPS.
No, because I've already moved on to the defense. I'm going to go and reread all my stuff afterwards. But like, as soon as I get it done, I push it out and I move on to the next thing because it's too much in the brain. Also, the RPS number didn't quite do it justice because there's just a lot of times when they're like, let's put our guys in a position where we have the better players, and they just did. I mean, the offensive line numbers were what really stuck out to me. This was an offensive line trouncing. And there weren't a whole lot of plays, so you even have to, like, amp it up from there. And the number that I think that, like, you should memorize is 72.5 minus 23 for a plus 49.5. That's the scores of the offensive line and tight ends versus Ohio State's front.
And that is... So this is when we talk about the PFF grades. They put out four all Big Ten teams. So they did 1-3 and then an honorable mention. So four all Big Ten teams. Michigan's offensive line got one guy. Stuber was second team. And you go and look at the it's impossible. I know that the quarterback has something to do with it. I know that the offensive coordinator has something to do with it. But this is the number two team in the country in sack rate. And it's not like McNamara was fielding a bunch of pressures where he had to get rid of the ball that didn't show up as sacks, right? Like, well, we watched this team all game. He was clean.
Yeah.
And then on the ground, their line yards are great. Their power success rate shot up over the second half of the season, and the reason that they were failing earlier was not really what the offensive line was doing, but some goofy decisions for short yardage plays. And there were zero tackles for loss for Ohio State in this game. And as I mentioned earlier, Michigan has given up 24 tackles for a loss this season. The second place team is Georgia with 37. So I understand that Son Haskins has a lot to do with that, and some other people have a lot to do with it. But for Michigan to accomplish that with one of the top 20 offensive linemen in the conference just doesn't pass the smell test for me.
No, and I think I figured out what was wrong back when we were doing Draftageddon, and I took a Rutgers offensive tackle, and I was like, look, PFF loves this guy. And it turned out he was a Rutgers offensive tackle, and I don't think he even made it at another year at Rutgers. Anyway, that's when I learned my lesson. I kind of figured out what went wrong here, and it's Pro Football Focus uses screens as passes. So if you get the ball out of the backfield really quickly, which a lot of teams that have terrible offensive linemen do, I think that they give the offensive lineman credit for plus one pass protection. And then if you sit back there for 3 seconds and you look for your guys, they also give you plus one for pass protection. So I saw this too with the Michigan State guards earlier this year, and no disrespect intended to Michigan State's guards, but they had the two guards were like the two best guards in the country to them for a while. And that really wasn't them. That was Kenneth Walker. We watched the Miami game and saw that he set up his blocks well. And then they gave those points to the offensive linemen. And then I think just the way that Michigan plays, where they actually put the onus on their offensive line, and they ask their offensive line to do things. Every time the teams play counter against us, right, they don't have nearly the success that Michigan has on that. And really what comes down to is when Michigan brings a guard across the line of scrimmage and they meet a defensive end who's set up on the hash mark, that guy moves. And there's probably nobody better in the country than Zach Zinner at making that block. And that's the block that Michigan runs their offense out of. And I don't think that Pro Football Focus is looking at that kind of thing. I think that they're looking at, you know, success of the play, and then look at the offensive lineman was nearby, and they credit him.
I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I think that their grades seem like they make a lot of sense for most of what they do, but their OL grades are just out there. So, anyway, back to the Ohio State game. I mean, defensively, we went into this thinking that they would have to bend but not break, and they mostly did that. And, you know, I think the thing that impressed me most that I wasn't expecting is, well, two things really, is that Michigan was able to hold up with their starting defensive tackles against the run, and then the starting corners did not get annihilated. You know, they suffered a few like awesome catches against them, but they were there to contest, they were there to tackle. At no point did you see one of those guys running open by 2 yards so he could catch and run to the end zone.
Yeah, so the things that I haven't charted the whole game yet, but I've obviously watched it quite a few times already, and I'm about, you know, almost to the end of the second half, or end of the first half with the charting itself. The things that I'm picking up on that are that weren't like just obvious watching the game. Ohio State ran a lot of tempo. They ran a lot of stretch zone against us, and Michigan sank or swam based off whether they got that edge block. So sometimes you got Hutchinson or Ojabo out there just stopping the line, and everybody the whole train stops, right? And other times that guy didn't get out there, and usually what they were doing with tempo was trying to get that edge, to get one more guy out there, move one tight end over there, or bring a receiver in, and get that extra edge blocker, and then try to get that edge. And that's really the only thing that was working against them. They did not move the defensive tackles at all in the run game. And this is a team that Alex and I put stars and shields all across that offensive line. And I mean, I don't know how to do it. I'm still, like, there's got to be some want to involved in this. I mean, there was, Mozzie Smith is just out there every play, like, just playing, but he's out of his mind. Like, I can't put that in. There's no charting that can describe that.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes like it's not want to. It's about knowing what to do. I just go back to that stretch play for Corum, where Steel Chambers barely moves the whole play. Like, I know that Michigan hasn't run stretch in this game yet, but they have been doing it down the tail end of the season here, and they've seen stretches, right?
Like, yeah,
they know what a stretch looks like and what you're supposed to do about it. And like, I guess maybe he's thinking he's got RPO responsibilities, but long after, it should be clear to him that there's no RPO coming. He's just kind of standing. So I kind of feel like we always talk about Ohio State and their like horseshoe, where it's like, you know, their starting quarterback gets injured and it's like, okay, fine, we'll put in this other guy, and he's Haskins, and he's still tearing Michigan up. And so we thought early in the season that the Oregon game was going to be a one-off, right?
Yeah,
like they were gonna fix it, and then when they got to Michigan, everything would be better. And I think finally that was not the case. You can't just install a new defense midseason and have it not be exploitable against a team that has a lot of preparation invested in a game and also has comparable talent.
Yeah, I mean, I was almost getting mad with Ohio State at the end because they get to the, we're in the fourth quarter, Michigan gets the ball back with 4.5 minutes left, Ohio State has 3 timeouts, and Michigan's just got to run the ball. Everyone knows Michigan's going to run the ball. It's Michigan. This is Harbaugh's Michigan. They have Hassan Haskins back there. What do you think they're going to do? And they're in a cover two shell.
Yes! So like, what are you doing?
Like, who are you playing? Like, and I think you're right. That goes back to the, after Oregon, they changed up their whole defense. They practiced this one thing because they hadn't done it before. And then that's what they're stuck in. And then the situation changes on them. You have a team that can play with you. You have offensive linemen who are stronger than your guys. You have Hassan Haskins, who is going to get 2 yards after you contact him, no matter how many people you have on there. He is going to get those 2 yards. If he can't get it himself, he will wait until his friends get behind him, and they'll push him for 2 yards. And they didn't have the answer for that. I mean, we have so many other teams that we face this year where, like, Rutgers comes down. Northwestern comes down. They'll challenge Michigan to beat them with extra safeties in the box. Ohio State just seemed so tentative about that.
Yeah, and I don't know. Just really hope this is some Larry Coker stuff going on right now. You can't say that with any sort of confidence here. But the sort of like cracks in the facade here that we saw over the course of this game, I don't think we've seen it from an Ohio State game in a long time. They came in and they were not mentally prepared. They came in, they got shook. That's not stuff that happens. And so, I don't know. I'm not saying this is the case, but you could look back on this game and see what happens next year, and it's like, oh, maybe hiring a total unknown in Ryan Day didn't actually work out. But that's something that we'll have to see over the course of the next few years.
I mean, Ohio State's still a good team. I think that over this period, over the 10 years that we went and if you want to extend it back out into like the late Lloyd era, they had the kind of talent that they could just, they could make mistakes. They had room for the horseshoe, right? And the way Michigan was playing and the team that Michigan put out there, you could not make those mistakes against them. That doesn't mean, I mean, Ohio State's going to field a good team next year. I'm sure if they change their coaches, they're going to get some guys. I'm sure we're going to lose some coaches too. And things are, you know, it's going to be a new team next year. We're not going to have Aiden Hutchinson. They didn't have an answer for that guy. Oh, my God.
He could come back.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He could have helped you.
If Michigan fans can raise more money than the NFL is willing to pay, perhaps.
I don't think that's out of the question. I don't think that's impossible.
The gauntlet has been thrown down. Michigan fans, you need to NIL this and make him an example. Make him so filthy rich that Mel Tucker has to come to him to borrow money. I never seen a guy that we shielded before get pulled. We put a shield in DeJuan Jones, and he gets pulled in this game. That's, I mean, we talk about, like, Iowa not being able to stand to Aiden Hutchinson and, like, oh, they're, what are their bad tackles going to do? These guys have the best tackles in the country. This is a Nicholas Petit-Frere can't handle this guy. So, I mean, this is on another level, and it's gorgeous to watch and really fun to chart, and that's why I'm putting so much time into it. But my only concern is that, like, was this just a one-off for Michigan? Did they just play out of their minds because of the situation and that stadium with the snow and the timing and everything that's gone before? And I mean, could that have just been like an emotional, I don't know. That's my one concern, I guess.
All right, so they moved the hockey game up for TV tonight, so I gotta get out of here. Next segment will be we'll bring in Matt D to talk about the basketball team. I am not skipping out because I don't want to talk about basketball. I
sure, sure.
look it up on the schedule, folks. It's 6:30 tonight. I gotta go. All right. We're gonna take another break.
Bye, hockey fan.
Then I won't be here.
Bye, hockey fan.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics.
If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce. Sell stuff online. Security. Performance. Conversion. Beautiful user experiences. Belle expérience utilisateur. Monthly marketing. PPC SEO. Make your user a customer. Conversion. Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use HomeSure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
I'm Matt D here from MLS Motor with the MGO Blog crew. Here to talk a bit of hoops.
Just taking the lead, aren't you? Just taking it away. Look at you. You don't even say the name. You even say the number. Do you know what number MGO Radio this is, Matt?
I do not. No.
What a guest. I love it. It's all right. I came in. Was it 12? 7-12? Yeah, 42-27. That's what it is. That's what we're calling it. All right, we welcome in Matt D. from Endless Motor. Now you can take it away.
All right, so let's talk about a bit about the UNC game that we had on Friday night. Obviously not the result that that anybody wanted. Did a deep dive on the game with the film, and you know what? I know it probably sounds ridiculous to most people, but you know, after watching the film, really wasn't as down as most people would have maybe be inclined to be. I really had some good thoughts with respect to our defense. Thought we made some progress there. I thought a lot of the second half, quite frankly, just came down to Caleb Love making NBA shots over guards that are maybe a bit, you know, bit undersized at the position. But I thought there was a lot of improvement in terms of being in the right place at the right time. Thought our rotations were better. We didn't have a lot of guys getting lost on screens. Didn't have any gambling for steals. Didn't have many guys being out of position. Offense, that's a bit of a different story.
Yeah.
You know, it's – You know, I'll say this. If we're talking X's and O's in scheme, the one big takeaway I had from this game, and I don't know that anybody else has talked about that, is that I don't know that they're running a lot of different sets. I think we have the same sort of bag of sets that we had from last year, but I think the distribution is different. And by that, I mean, I think we're running a lot more of our delay series, which is basically just a five out. And what that does, right, it pulls Hunter out on the perimeter and functionally makes him. Now, the problem that I have with that I've seen nobody talk about is that the opposition is not doubling him on the outside. So right. If you remember, like, we're running motion weak, he gets the ball in the post. And what that enabled him to do is make a skip pass. Now, if you have to close out to a guy that's two passes away, then the entire defense is in scramble mode, which creates a lot of collapsing the defense and a lot of open opportunities. If he's making those passes from the top of the key, they're one pass away. It just makes a huge difference. Now, the question is whether you could put Dickinson down low and high low and have Musa with the entry pass. I'm inclined to say yes, but there's not a body of work that says we can do it. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that, but I think that's where I'd like to see this head.
Well, Musa made a triple off a pass, and it wasn't just a. I know, but like if that, I mean, that's the kind of thing. I know that you are not a, you know, they need to make shots outside to make this happen, but you know, I went through some B-line years, and that's kind of my vision. That, and I know that a lot of basketball teams function that way, and that's been a good way to predict how basketball teams are going to work. And the perimeter shooting here, I mean, every time Brandon Johns turns down a three-point shot when he gets the ball out there, to the point where North Carolina was just like, go ahead and take one. I mean, that was alarming.
I clipped a few of those possessions, and I have to say, there was one double stagger that we ran where Houston made a beautiful read. So Moose is dragging two guys with him. They're trying to tag the roll because, obviously, he's a great athlete. He's going to finish around the rim. Johns had to be wide open for a catch-and-shoot three, I mean, by 6 feet. I mean, it wasn't even semi-contested when you're 6'9". You just have to let it fly, make or miss. At that point, no, you're absolutely right. There's something to be said for it, and there is something to be said for the team, the shooting woes, right? Like, what are we right now, 29, a tad over 29%, I want to say, from three? That's got to be that threshold has to be 33%. Like, we do have to make shots. But that said, I think it's overstated about the make shots solution to everything. Like, if we're talking a team that shoots 36% versus a team that shoots 33%, that's literally 1-3 a game. That's all we're talking about, the difference between 9 out of 25 and 8 out of 25. So I don't think we're it's that much of a factor at this point. I think there are other issues that are more prominent at this point, but no, you do have to make shots. And we did see Houston kind of come around making some of his threes, and he wasn't out of position defensively as much as we've seen in the early going. So I thought there was some progress there, but no, Seth, I think you hit the nail on the head. And this isn't a one-off with Musa, right? Like, I think when we saw him against, was it Seton Hall or UNLV or Arizona, he hit like a long two with 1 foot on the line, and he's consistently hitting like mid-range twos. And this is no surprise to your author. I know the scouting report to everybody else has been just a freak athlete that can't shoot, but I've shared film with you guys, and you saw like exclusive, like, he's hitting threes. I've saw it in IMG. This is no surprise to me. Like, I'm not saying the guy's going to be a 40% shooter, but I think there is potential.
Doesn't have to be. With his athleticism, that's what opens up this game. And like I know you were clapping the moment that it was announced that he was starting this game. I mean, no offense to Johns, but I'm sure that somewhere you were doing a pretty big fist pump.
This has been a long time in the world. I'll tell you why I think this has been. Juwan has been planning this, right? I think this is why he's installing that delay action five-out set, because he's been preparing for this exact moment to alleviate the spacing concerns. That's what I really think he's been – I mean,
he's planning his offense around, like, without Hunter Dickinson?
Well, no, I think he's planning the offense around Hunter Dickinson and Musa, which is why he was experimenting with the five-out look in the beginning of the season so that he can insert Musa's team. Now, it didn't work out that way, but I think that was the thought. I think that was – he was inclined to think, okay, this alleviates some of the spacing concerns, and it didn't for a variety of reasons, ones that you touched on, you know, in terms of Johns not taking the shots, and just – there are a variety of reasons. But it's been fairly obvious that Musa's – I mean, I don't know what you guys think. At worst, he's probably our third best player at this point. On some nights, he's frankly our best two-way player. But, yeah, I do think we have to get Hunter more touches in positions where he can score – you know, 8, 10 feet away from the basket. This 20 feet away from the basket stuff, I just don't think it's going to cut it.
Yeah, Matt, I'm curious upon rewatch, where do you sit on the minutes distribution at the point in particular with Frankie versus Devontae Jones or maybe using Eli there? Where are you at on that?
So I'm generally a guy that because I'm a big NBA guy, I like to have a 10-game sample. Like, it's hard to draw conclusions 6 or 7 games in. It's 7 games is basically a fluke, particularly when you take into account that Jones is in foul trouble and that sort of thing. That being said, I think Alex raises a very good point. I have eyes, though, right? 10-game sample or not, like, it's hard to sort of reconcile Jones's playing time. What is he at, 30, 32, 33 minutes a game? With what we're seeing, and he just doesn't have a lot of change of direction, change of speed off the dribble. He doesn't really have the ability to create space, and he's even having a hard time even with the screen. Like, he's not even utilizing the screens properly. You know, you have to wait for your big to come there to get around it. He hasn't been able to do that. They're icing ball screens. They were not even in offense until probably 13, 14 seconds left on the clock. Now, that said, you know, Frankie isn't the perimeter shot maker maybe that we all like to see right now. But that being said, his assist rate is hovering around 30 right now, which for, you know, a freshman, that's pretty impressive. And all that to say that I think we have to give him a bit more leash in his minutes, especially if he's giving us good minutes. And what was he at then? Do you guys recall what he was at in North Carolina? Probably somewhere around 12 to 15 minutes?
Yeah. He was the most he's played so far, by far. He was 13 minutes, and he was 15 minutes at Charleston minutes. State. So
I think that's, for me, that'd be a pretty good baseline of what we'd like to see. Because, I mean, if nothing else, it allows him to get some developmental time. That way, if we need him come January, February, or March, he's prepared. But I have liked him as a playmaker. He's had a few out-of-control moments where he's, you know.
More than a few. He's got a 36% turnover rate right now.
Yeah, that's my point. But
like, there's bad, and then there's that's over 30 of your possessions are being
Seth,
the team.
Seth is right, but I think some of those, if I'm correct, I think a few of those have charges, and that's the issue. If he can just get rid of the charges where he's basically, you know, rumbling down the lane in a straight line, I think that may alleviate some issues, but I don't know that we have a good solution at the point guard position, barring Jones just being...
Oh, wait. Lost you here for a second. I'm just going to continue while you... you there? Are you back?
I'm back on, sure.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. You're talking about the point guard
situation. I don't know that we have a solution to the point guard issue that we currently have, barring Jones just basically getting it together. First of all, he just has to stay on the court. Like, we have to, at a bare minimum, we have to get rid of the silly fouls 90 feet away from the basket. Like, it can't happen at a bare minimum.
Yeah, I thought he did better about that against UNC. He had one terrible offensive penalty way, you know, far away from the play, and that was like Michigan's last possession where they had any shot of coming back. And his turnover rate is just under 30 as well. So, like, that's... I expected a high turnover rate. I was not expecting him not to be much of a shooter. I mean, he doesn't even take them. He's only taken 8 shots so far from range. And, like, that's got to be in your offense because you have so many guys who are not going to be getting the ball up. I mean, he's just... Right now, he can have one of those problems, right? He could not be a shooter, or he could be committing too many fouls, or he could be turning the ball over too many times. It's all of them is the problem.
Yeah, so, you know, he's not going to be a pull-up guy because he doesn't have a legit jump shot, right? He's a set shooter. He doesn't get much elevation. So that you can live with, like Seth said, but you need him to be respectful as a catch-and-shoot guy in the corner, and you need him not to turn the ball over. Like, I don't know that we need him to score in the same capacity that did at Coastal Carolina. In fact, we probably don't. It wouldn't be good for the team, right? Because that means Dickinson's not involved and he's not getting touches. But I do think you need him hovering around 10 or 11 feet to gain, ideally 4 or 5 assists.
Yeah, man. I mean, if he can't do it, then, like, you're asking Eli to do it. Eli has been fantastic for this team. After the UNC game, I kind of started, like, just a sheet of, okay, tickets to the game, right? Like, tickets to this team, okay? Who's a part of this? Who's going to be part of this after we figure out where everyone's going? Hunter, obviously. Eli, obviously. And... I think Musa is playing his way into that. So if those are the three guys you're starting with, Caleb Houston kind of has to be one of those, but you need a lot more out of Caleb Houston. He's just, you said, I mean, his defense is coming around. His shot is better than people recognize. His drives to the basket, I think, are something he might have gotten away with a lot and probably looked good when he was at Mount Verde and everybody out of Mount Verde is a shooter, and like you can't get away from anybody. But when they can just sit in the lane and wait for him, it's really ineffective. And those are taking away opportunities for him just to be a shooter. I think he just needs to find his role.
Yeah, it's been a tough transition for Caleb because, Seth, you touched on it. Like, at Mount Verde, I mean, literally, I don't even think I'm exaggerating here. I think he was playing with 3 lottery picks in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
That's the kind of team we're talking about, right? So, I mean, he had opportunities where he's basically the 4th or 5th option. And in Michigan, he can't, given this team's weaknesses in terms of shooting, like, he can't be that. Like, he needs to be a volume shooter, like you said. And there were some signs against North Carolina. Like, Juwan made some adjustments, and he started bringing him off screens to get the DHO instead of just asking him to, you know, basically out-quick somebody, and it worked. He hit that when coming off the DHO, and it didn't draw iron, but you're right. His forays to the rim haven't been that successful, but I have been impressed with him as a shot creator for others, not for himself. That is a quality that he brings, but the issue is that that's not what we really need him to do. We need him to be the guy to be a play finisher rather than a playmaker. And I think there are some signs of that. Now, I was a little skeptical. I remember we did the season preview, and I was kind of hinting around at, like, let's hold the horses on this guy being a 40% shooter, because I saw some things in FIBA that were like, yeah, I don't know if I'm buying him being a 40% shooter as, like, a primary option. So I think we're going to have to recalibrate, and if he can just get around 35%, I think that does a lot for this team.
Sure. And then, I mean, do you see a role? What's Terrence Williams supposed to be? What can he be? Because, like, he was the energy guy before. This game, they didn't use him very much. That might have been because Hunter Dickinson didn't get a whole lot of time either. But, like, one of our answers, especially before they picked up all these 5-stars, was that Michigan could be kind of a high-low team, and Williams is your energy guy, and Dickinson's your burly center. And I don't know if... I don't know if they figured out what they want to do with him yet, but I feel like the answer has to include him because he brings so many things that everyone else is missing.
So you're right. I mean, theoretically, he's the energy guy that can now hit a shot. The problem is the latter part of that equation hasn't been so successful for him in recent games, right?
Yeah.
So this is the thing that I want to point out, and I think it's more important with basketball than any other sport. Looking at Michigan's season so far, I don't think anybody would say it's been successful. But basketball, more than any other sport, in my opinion, is a matchup-dependent sport. So Michigan is a team that ideally wants to win by size, length, and athleticism and skill in the front court. The problem is the teams that we've played so far can match that. That's really been the issue in Arizona, North Carolina, Seton Hall. I don't know how many of those teams you're going to see like that moving forward. So I guess
Illinois.
I say all that to say, yeah.
Purdue.
you're gonna see Purdue, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna see Purdue, but Purdue is not. They have Edie, which absolutely we're correct. But I don't know how many more of those teams we're gonna see, like in Arizona, that literally throws out pros. That's the issue. But all that to say, if Carolina and Arizona are playing 2 7-footers at the same time in the front court, it's impossible for Terrence Williams to get minutes and be effective because he no longer has that advantage, which makes him a unique mismatch problem. The idea is for him to bully lighter and lankier wings and for him to outquick slower bigs. And the matchups we've had thus far haven't really allowed for him to do that. Now, all that being said, we're going to need him to hit shots from the perimeter at an adequate clip to optimize his abilities and to optimize lines with him. So, you know, a lot like Caleb, T-Will, as I like to affectionately call him, he's going to have to hit some shots. But he does bring a lot of qualities in terms of offensive rebounding. He's versatile. He can check a few different positions depending on the matchup. So, in theory, I like what he brings, but he's got to be able to hit a few shots. Other than that, you're just going to stagger Musa and Hunter and just basically let those guys stagger each other and kind of rotate your lineups around those two.
Before we're done, I wanted to preview San Diego State, especially because mine and Brian's kids were both home from school. Mine were home because we were locked in for COVID, and their school was canceled as well, but Brian's was canceled yesterday, too, because of the teachers are all doing shooting drills. Wonderful world we live in. Anyway, we didn't get to do a San Diego State preview, so I figured we'll just do it here. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at them, but, old Michigan fans all remember Brian Dutcher because he's he was the recruiting coordinator for Michigan, and under Coach Fisher, and then followed him to San Diego State, obviously, and has done well for himself. It's kind of funny looking at old pictures because he looks like old Jim Harbaugh, and he's aged a lot more than Jim, even though they're about the same age.
I don't know much about San Diego State. I've been pretty locked into football like the rest of us, but I will say this one guy on their roster that I'm very familiar with that I think we're going to have to keep an eye on is Matt Bradley. Mm-hmm. He's basically a G. Nathan Williams carbon copy, a bully ball 6'5 wing that's going to be bigger, stronger, and faster probably than anybody we throw at him. And I think if we can stop him, that sort of bodes well for what we're going to be able to do in this matchup. I don't know if you guys preview their big. Do they have a lot of size on the
They've got one guy with size, really. It's Nathan Mensah. He's a traditional bucket guy.
Shot blocker supreme.
Yep, okay. Yep.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Mensah. I scouted him extensively in high school. So maybe this is a game where Juwan gets his actions on track, and it's more importantly his line combinations. How does he want to attack and that sort of thing, and work on the high-low with the entry passes and sort of get Hunter back in a good spot mentally. You know, he's been visibly frustrated on a few different instances throughout the last week or so, and I'd like to get him off to a fast start as a score just to make him feel good and the rest of the team feel good.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw a few things out here just looking at San Diego State. They were a pretty good team last year. They were a 6 seed in the tourney but lost to Syracuse in the first round, which happens to a lot of teams against Syracuse in the tourney. But some roster turnover. They got Matt Bradley from Cal, who Matt was talking about. He's become their high-usage guy. And what's interesting, they're kind of a mirror in some ways of Michigan, where they were a top 50 three-point shooting team last year. They're currently at 27.6% on the season from three, and their offense is just cratered, but they have a top 10 defense. So this could be a pretty gritty and ugly-looking game if Michigan is playing offense like we've seen them in the last few games. And the other thing I'll throw out here is this is a 1 p.m. tip, and San Diego State is a Pacific time zone team. And, you know, I don't
know
what
the stats are
in college basketball, but in the NFL, when West Coast teams have to play at 1 on the East, like, they play worse, generally speaking. So that's going to be an interesting area to see if Michigan can get a little bit of a faster start, perhaps, just by being more on their natural body clock, you know? So
yeah, a couple of my concerns are, one, they're ranked higher than UNC was on KenPom. Another one is that some of the shooting woes that they have, most of that's coming from the bench. Matt Bradley has been a better shooter in his career. He's only at 18% right now.
Yeah.
And then their entire bench is like 28%, 2 out of 10, 1 out of 9. Like, their guys are just not, they're just bricking it. And that's not what they've been traditionally. Now, their point guard, Trey Pullman, he's hitting at 39%. He's got a pretty decent assist rate and not really going to go inside the lane at all. But, you know, he doesn't really need to because they've got so many other guys who can slash. Lamont Butler is their other guard slash wing, another guy who's going to get to the rim. But he does not take bad shots, and he's hitting at 47%. He also gets to the line. I think he got to the line a lot last year. And then their last wing is Keshad Johnson, who is a little undersized to be a 4 against Michigan's bigs. Another guy who's just not made his shots this year, but he has been money at the rim, mostly on putback stuff. He's not a high-usage guy. But, like, you know, Michigan's had problems with teams that can get people to the rim and had problems with teams that have a pretty good defensive center. And I don't know, is Nathan Mensah a guy who's going to give Hunter Dickinson the kind of trouble he's had already?
Yeah, I can say that, you know, scouting him at the high school level, I haven't necessarily seen him at San Diego State, but yeah, his length is pretty impressive. He is a shot blocker, but Hunter is a guy where if you get him the ball with deep position, and I think that's the thing that's been missing, he can bully guys to the rim. We've seen him do it to Garza. We've seen him do it to guys with legit size. I would just like to see him get the ball a little bit closer to the rim so that his both his scoring prowess and his playmaking prowess is a bit more effective. That way the defense is in scramble mode. And I think it's probably not optimizing him, having him at the top of the key with the opposing center daring him to take a long two. I just like to see him a little bit closer to the basket. And we'll see. You know, I am optimistic that the team does turn this around. I'm not necessarily saying we're going to make a Final Four run. You know, I don't know if that's realistic at this point, but I don't think the team is what we've seen so far. I do think they're at least considerably better than what we've seen so far.
And all I think just to add a final note before we, you know, finish here, just you remember in 2017-18, Michigan had that terrible Maui tournament. They were
That's a very good point.
On the run. They came home against UCLA at like a 1 p.m. game on a Saturday afternoon, same circumstance, and they pulled that game out, I think, in overtime, if I remember correctly. That was the game that Xavier Simpson ascended to the starting point guard role. And so not saying that's going to happen, but we've had circumstances like this in the recent past, so we'll hope for the best.
That's a good thought to end on. All right, guys, thanks a lot. Go Blue. Let's go beat Iowa. Win the Big Ten.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska. He hates a vodka bandit from his home. He hates Aruska.
Aruska.
Vodka.
Vodka.
He never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska.